The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to America's Heroes Group Roundtable with partner NCHV, National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, the only disease preventable by a vaccine that is cancer. Make sure you get it. Today is Saturday, January 16th, 2021. Our host is Cliff Kelly. I am the co-host, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold. Executive producer is Glenda Smith, and our digital media producer is Manny Carazzari. Today's topic, we have two esteemed panelists, and we will be talking about military, systemic, and institutional racism and VA programs, overrepresentation of black veterans in the homeless population. And who I have with me is Catherine Monet, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, and also Ralph Cooper, the Community and Residential Veteran Services Coordinator, Cloudbreak Houston, LLC, and co-founder of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. I am pleased and honored to have both of you. This is a very, very important topic. And again, we'll be talking about military, systemic, and institutional racism and VA programs over representation of black veterans in the homeless population. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Would you like to start off, Catherine, and tell us a little bit about what's going on with the homeless population and why is it so important for us to be focusing on this now?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having us. Yeah. NCHV is an organization that is dedicated to ending veteran homelessness, and, you know, we do that in a lot of ways, policy and advocacy, trainings for service providers, a toll-free hotline for veterans facing a housing crisis. But, I mean, we're here today to talk about the overrepresentation of black veterans in the homeless population. I don't know if your listeners know this, but, you know, black veterans make up about a third of the homeless veterans population. Wow. But they only make up 12% of the overall veteran population. And when you look at the numbers, you know, between 2018 and 19, there was a little bit of an increase in unsheltered black veterans, which is very troubling. And, you know, when you think about the reasons for that, right, I mean, they do face some of the same things as non-black veterans and some of the same things as civilians in terms of, you know, a housing affordability crisis, don't pay nearly as much as they should, and a variety of factors. But there are some specific things that, you know, make them more susceptible, right? And I think one thing to think about is the impact that living through a significant amount of racism can have on, you know, an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that's absolutely. And we're finding out about and talking more about, we already found out about it a long time ago, the social determinants of health. You know, people are categorizing those on the federal level and the state and local levels. But we know what it feels like to be without food, without, you know, all the things that they're listing, without transportation, adequate access to health care. We've been living it. And this is really tragic, especially when we look at veterans who have, sworn, held their hand up and taken an oath to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to be treated then less than being that kind of iconic figure is tragic in itself in this country. And, COVID-19 actually has been superimposed on that, has even, showed even more how that's affecting these populations. And without people, you know, on the street, I would give veterans money all the time when I'm walking, you know, if I saw them homeless on the street and I talked to them for a while. And, now because no one's on the streets, they can't even ask for money, right? They can't get the assistance or the social contact that you normally would have. And many of them are suffering from PTSD and other health, mental health issues as well. So, you know, maybe Ralph, tell us a little bit more about how, you know, you see this whole issue and what are your perceptions about, you know, the institutionalized racism and how that's affecting us?
Well, thank you so much. And one of the things that really strikes me is that, you know, I work with about 500 previously homeless veterans in Houston, Texas. And so everybody, of course, is watching the news. and the big news thing is the insurgency of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the individuals who are being caught and questioned are veterans. Mm-hmm. So the black veterans come up to me, and when I came to work the next day, and said, Mr. Cooper, you know, if they were black or Hispanic, brown people, they'd have been shot, they'd have been arrested, they'd have been beat upside the head, much like they did the Black Lives Matter folks. Mm-hmm. And I could not argue with them on that. So it made me really stop and think about what if the reality is about veterans in the racist and white organizations that are doing a lot of this, is they are veterans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was going to save this comment for last, but I think I'm going to say it right now because it's mm-hmm. so relevant mm-hmm. that if I can get it to where the old eyes can see it.
Yes, I got my glasses on now.
All right. So it says that back in 1866, the Ku Klux Klan was formed by a group of Confederate war veterans. Mm-hmm. The Ku Klux Klan now. And in a nutshell, it also speaks to how after World War II, it kind of waned, you know, the whole issue of trying to mess over black folks through KKK and other right-wing organizations like that. But then, you know, after I left Vietnam in 1968, when Martin Luther King, which his birthday is, what, 2 days from now? Mm-hmm. When he was assassinated, they on an American base in Vietnam, the Ku Klux Klan marched in parade. Mm. Now, that's 1968.
Yes.
So, you know, what we see happening right now is, you know, what is it, Georgia? All of Michigan, all of those states that were turned blue, especially Georgia, where they elected two Democrats.
Right.
All of those states where they had big, large black populations are the ones that they wanted to overturn the vote.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely a connection. You know, we are out of the veteran population that's incarcerated, mm-hmm. black and Hispanic veterans. The ratio is much higher. Mm-hmm. With COVID, mm-hmm. the most people that get COVID among the veteran population are the black and brown veterans. And also, as my colleague already mentioned, that we make up a huge portion of the homeless population, way outnumbering the 12% that we make up of the total military.
Yes.
You know, it's how is that related? These things are so related, to as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. because here we are. We need here is a pandemic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Black veterans are getting the disease more than anybody else among the veteran population.
Yes.
More than the whole.
Yeah, here in Illinois, we had about 29 veterans die and one VA facility. In one facility, 29 veterans, and they were mostly African American. And you know, one of the things that I, you know, what you were saying, is that when we look at this, you know, when we took the oath to wear this uniform, right, and to serve the country, it was to support and defend the country, not to tear it apart. And that's why we had the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And people were actually tried for treason on at the high seas, right? That goes back in the history of the military, where if you are in sedition or insurrection and you're trying to overthrow the government you're supposed to be supporting and representing, then it's time for you to go. It's time for you to you are no longer considered to be a veteran in good standing. I'll put it that mildly, right?
Yeah, that you're not only go, but you'll end up in jail more than life.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things, you know, as you were talking about that, you know, Catherine, you know, you were mentioning that, you know, we represent 12% of the general population and 33% of the homeless. And what I noticed, you know, from looking at some of the data is that for African Americans, we're four times more likely to be hospitalized. If you're on the renal dialysis, or you know you have end stage renal disease, you're 11 times more likely to be hospitalized. And what we're seeing is a disproportionate impact on African Americans. So you're four times more likely to be hospitalized if you're African American. So within the veteran population, I'm not sure of what we're seeing out there right now. You know, people are going without mental health interventions. They are, and they're facing a system that historically, you know, has had problems with African Americans as far as, you know, recognizing disabilities and recognizing, you know, certain healthcare concerns. So what are you seeing right now in the homeless population? What should we be aware of and what should we be doing? Because I don't like to keep talking about stuff and not do something. So what should we be doing for veterans right now?
Well, I'll start with what we're seeing. And I think all of the things that you said are true, right? Mm-hmm. Black veterans are more likely to be unemployed, more likely to go hungry, more likely to be homeless. But none of those things happen just on their own, right? So mm-hmm. I think we need to start thinking upstream and thinking about how the things that are happening in other systems are causing this cascading effect that is causing us to be homeless at a higher rate, right? So right. I do think that there probably needs to be some kind of bigger picture reform where we're looking at, you know, how we're accessing education and home loans and what happens when you default on your home loan and mm-hmm. how you get connected to your benefits and services. And I mean, things are even broader than just in the VA system, right? Because veterans mm-hmm. are in fact humans and they're able to access all of the same social safety net services that anyone is able to. But when you look at things like SNAP, for example, there are a fair number of veterans who would be eligible but who aren't actually enrolled. So I think we need to do a lot of looking at these things. We also need to do a lot of destigmatizing, you know, assistance programs and some of the staple programs that people rely on to get back on their feet. And we just need to do more. We need to invest in solutions for people.
Yeah, why do you think that is, with people not being enrolled in SNAP? Is it informational issue, or is it you know, access, or what's the problem? Why aren't more of our veterans, you know, being guided to take advantage of those benefits?
You know, I think in some communities it is informational, in others it's challenges, you know, getting through paperwork and, mm-hmm. you know, getting across town to get those things done. Some of it is just stigma, right? And people mm-hmm. thinking, oh, I don't want the EBT card because, you know, people look down on that. But if it's a service you need in your life, I think people should go for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of our guests who was on, you know, earlier was mentioning the need for us to be involved with policy, that a lot of times these policies go forward and then there's unfunded mandates, or, you know, it's hidden in a shell bill somewhere. So you never really see that thing being implemented. So with the policies that you see surrounding this whole issue, because, you know, I'm working in a company now that's really progressive, you know, with respect to, you know, equity issues, Blue Cross Blue Shield right now in Illinois, they are really pushing to make sure that equity is in the forefront. So what do you think that we need to be doing to push equity as a veterans issue through the policymaking mill, you know, to make sure that we are putting this forefront, because most of the nation is moving in that direction. And the military used to lead in this, right, because it was the first place that really integrated and did all kinds of things. So there were some great accomplishments from the military itself and, you know, putting forces down in, you know, Selma, Alabama. And, you know, during the civil rights movement, there was a representation of that force for the right side, right, to do things that were just. So what do you think it is that we need to do to reinstill that in people and get that message out again, that equity and justice for all is what the military should be for in this country?
Well, you know, Colonel, you're correct that the military did integrate, but mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that the military still... Mm-hmm. We have racial discrimination, yes. harassment, yeah. Yeah. or both, during a 12-month period, and the results were withheld by the Defense Department, which underscores racism in the ranks in the 2017 survey. And these results have not been previously reported. It shows mm-hmm. that U.S. troops who experienced racial discrimination and harassment had higher levels of dissatisfaction with the complaint process and largely didn't report it. So mm-hmm. a lot of times we don't know that these things are going on because they're kind of squashed. So, and what I'm saying is not only on the veteran side of things do we need to have policy changes, but the overall population, we still are 3/5 of a person. Mm-hmm. In the Constitution.
Oh, yes, 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 yeah.
So how about starting there?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
we mm-hmm. need to get that to say that we still have to go every, 25 years and get the Voting Rights Act
active, yes, yes.
reestablished? Yes. How about getting the amendment passed right now that our congressman gave his lifetime to make happen? Mm-hmm. There are so many things that we can do that are already kind of started. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, because if it's good for the general black population of America, it's also good for the veterans.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. And when you raise your hand, they don't ask you when you're taking an oath what color you are, right?
Or what party you belong to.
That's right. Or party. That's
they
right.
They want to know one thing.
Right.
Does the the uniform isn't going to fit, but when you raise your hand, are you willing to die? And so we raise our hand saying, we're willing to die for you.
Yes.
We don't know who the rest of those people are in America, but we're willing to sacrifice our lives for them.
Yeah. You know, so Karen, can you tell us, Catherine, you know, how can we get in touch with your organization, you know, the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, website, phone number, or, you know, how can people get involved with what you're doing? Because I think this is really a progressive movement. I really I like what you're doing and the direction you're going in. So how can we get involved?
Yeah. So there are a couple of ways, and I think the first thing is to go check out our website. It's www.nchv.org. That's nchv.org. We're on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, I believe. Mm-hmm. And if you are a veteran who is in a housing crisis and you want to call and have us kind of help you navigate the system and refer you to programs in your community that can help, you can call 1-800-VET-HELP. So 1-800-VET-HELP. For assistance, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Wow. Okay, that's fantastic. You made the website easy to remember for a guy like me too. You know, so I see some of those websites with 15 words. So it's www.nchv.org. And it should be 1-800-VET-HELP, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. but you really are providing a great deal of information. You know, can you close us out? We are getting close to the time, but I want you to have a little bit more time for your closeout. We have about 5 minutes to go, and I want you to tell us, you know, and I'll start with you, Catherine, since we've been talking, and I want you to give us a view. You know, a minute or two of what you think is important, most important for people to know about the homeless veteran situation.
So I think that there's a lot that's important. I think the one thing that I want to raise for people is that if you are someone who is a landlord who's got empty units, an employer who's got a job to fill, please consider hiring someone who is exiting homelessness. I think, you know, we're in an economic crisis. The crisis is hitting people of color a lot harder than other folks in this country. And those are folks who predominantly make up the homeless population and people who generally have challenges looking for units that they can afford that'll rent to them and looking for employment that is suitable. So I will say that. I will also say one other thing, and it's that this country is long overdue for a reckoning with racial justice, and I think we are only at the very beginnings of it. I want, with the bottom of my heart, to be optimistic and to feel like we will get to a good place by the time my life is over, but I'm not very optimistic. So I think I'm happy that Mr. Cooper is closing us out.
Yeah, and you know, when I was I was doing combat duties in Iraq, I had gotten this one particular situation where, you know, you rely on your unit and the people you're working with, and that, you know, so we didn't care about your color or all that other stuff, because if someone's shooting at you or an RPG is coming in, you're trying to save someone's life, you know, that's part of your group. And for people to act in a negative way that we saw at the Capitol was disheartening to me, to know that people still hold on to those, you know, those ideologies that are so negative and don't, you know, don't really represent who we should be. And you know, so, you know, Ralph, maybe you can go in and tell us a little bit more. And one of the things I wanted to focus on, too, is that for women's veterans, especially those with children on the street, it's really particularly difficult. And for African-American males, because you don't have the option of going on to Medicaid and, you know, those services that normally are offered to people. So it's really particularly difficult in those situations. So maybe you can tell us some more about this. Yeah.
Especially the veterans that are under 65 years old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the veterans that are homeless that are older can qualify for Medicare or other kinds of things. But the real situation that I see right now, mm-hmm. where landlords are once again able to evict because the restrictions have been lifted, we need to really concentrate on letting our congressmen know we need to reinstate the restriction on eviction. Because in my case, we have 500 units. So we're not, our policy is we're not going to make a person homeless veteran again. We got them out of homelessness, and we want to keep them out of homelessness.
Yes.
However, though, they do have to pay their rent. So we would support some the stimulus program to help, you know, make it possible for them to pay rent. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do not believe in, you know, people should be, even though they're homeless, once they're housed, they should learn about the reality of America that you don't live free.
That's right.
So paying rent's important, becoming an independent person, keeping your house clean, buying food. Mm-hmm. So we need to support all of these efforts out here to keep our homeless going and hopefully they'll be able to go out and purchase their own home or get their own apartment
Right.
One
yes.
day when they leave office.
Right. And that's right. You reminded me of one thing. You know, we are the land of the free because of those brave, right? Those brave veterans that are
right.
homeless right now. And so I want to thank both of you. We're running out of time now, but we have got to have you back again and again. But you are our partner, so I'm sure we will be seeing you again. But National Coalition of Homeless Veterans, go to www.nchv.org. And the number that was given is 1-800-VET-HELP, VETHELP, Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And I am just so pleased to have the two of you. Thank you for your service to our veterans. And this is from my heart. You are the reason why that Capitol is standing in Washington, D.C., and we need to preserve that. That's why we're here. And whatever difficulties we have to work through as a nation on racial basis, on a gender basis, we have to work together. That's why the nation is put together. That should never be the reason for dissolving the union. And those people who are acting in that way don't need to be part of the union. They need to be part of a jail system. So thank you very much, and thank you again, Catherine Monet and Ralph Cooper. And we are going to go on to a break, and we want everyone to stay right there with us. We have a long way to go, so stay with us, and thank you for your service again, both Catherine and Ralph.